Hello and welcome to Jibe Talk in the Volvo Sailing Podcast. In this edition, we talk to Group Armour skipper Frank Camas after a stellar year for the Frenchman that's seen him take the Jules Verne trophy and Lion honours in the Route de Rhum, both on board Group Armour 3. And next, it's the Volvo Ocean Race. Matt Sheehan's in Dubai for the final Louis Vuitton Trophy Regatta and says goodbye to America's Cup monohulls with BMW Oracle's Murray Jones. And we also check in with Andy Micklejohn to find out how his preparations are going for the Barcelona World Race on board Hugo Boss with Alex Thompson. But as is traditional, before all of that, we have the Volvo Sailing Podcast news headlines. BMW Oracle set the pace in the Louis Vuitton Trophy in Dubai. They're in the semi-finals along with Emirates Team New Zealand, the Synergy Russian Sailing Team and Artemis Racing. Skipper Ian Walker's unveiled his first four recruits for the Abu Dhabi Racing Team in the next Volvo with two previous winners, navigator Jules Salter and bowman Justin Slattery. Also on board, watch leader Craig Satterthwaite as well as Simon Sci-Fi Fisher. Defending champion Seve Jarvin is on course to defend his New South Wales 18-foot skiff title after three successive victories in Sydney Harbour. And in the ISAF Sailing World Championships in Perth, Australian sailors took two of the eight titles on offer, with the remaining six spread around the rest of the globe. The Netherlands, Spain, Finland, France, Israel and Sweden also striking gold. Well, first of all, we have that interview with Frank Camas, and I have to apologise. Not spotted while we were doing the interview, and the phone line did pick up a few gremlins. I hope it doesn't spoil your enjoyment too much. Well, delighted to say that we're joined for this latest edition of Jibe Talkin', the Volvo Sailing Podcast, by one of the extraordinarily successful sailors in the world this year, France's Frank Camas, of course, of Group Armour fame. We have lots of things we want to talk to him about, like the Jules Verne and the Route de Rhum, but we're going to start with the fact that, Frank, you're in Alicante. That's where we find you, and what are you up to in Spain?
Yeah, we are with all the Group Armour team in Alicante, and we discovered the place where we will go next year for the start of the Volvo Ocean Race, and we train for the inshore race here, and we go tomorrow like the first leg of the Volvo, we go to Lanzarote.
So you really are rehearsing an actual start for the race, is that right?
Yeah, exactly. We trained the shore crew and the crew for next year in the same place at the start of the race. So it's the first time for us to have all the crew and all the shore team and all the team in the same outside place. Because otherwise we were together in Lorient, our base, and it's a good training to change the place like that for the next Volvo Ocean Race.
Obviously, you were sailing on your own in the Route de Rhum. How has it been catching up with the Group Armour Volvo crew again?
It's easy with the crew, for sure. It's easier than alone on the boat. I stay at the helm, so there is no problem in the maneuver compared with the single-handed on the trimaran. And I'm very excited to sail with these four guys around me. And for sure, it will be a big race with all the crew around the Group Armour team with a big team like Team New Zealand and Puma. So I am very excited to come back on the races with the crew on board.
We'll look ahead at the next Volvo race at the moment, but while we're talking, we really have to chat about this extraordinary year that you've had, taking the Jules Verne trophy, line honours in the Route de Rome. Has everything gone just right, if you like, for Groupama this year?
Yeah, for sure. It's a very good year for the team, for all the team and Groupama, with two big victories. One victory with crew around the world with Jules Verne, and one victory done with the same boat during the Route du Rhum. So it's a fantastic year. I hope the next year the same.
Frank, again, we have to talk about this. I'm sorry, but when people first heard that you were sailing Groupama 3 on your own, I have to admit they thought you were mad. How was it?
It was a very good trip. Was not harder than in 60-footer before. Groupama 3 is a very big boat. The maneuver is very hard for a lone guy like me, but at the same time, it's very stable. There is less risk of capsize compared with the smaller boats. So it was a fantastic time alone on Groupama 3, and I finished first, so it's a very good thing.
Obviously not mad at all, I guess, if you take line honours. Anyway, moving on. Frank, the success you've had this year is in a trimaran, and now you're switching to the Volvo 70s, a monohull. What made you want to do the Volvo race after that success with the multi-hull?
The Volvo race is the biggest event in offshore race in the world, so with Groupama and with trimaran, we did a lot of races in against other trimarans, but often with the French competitors. So we want to fight against the best crew in the world and the best crew in the world. Race on the multi-hull and on the Volvo Chernobyl race. So it's a very good opportunity and exciting opportunity to fight with the international crew during the next Volvo Chernobyl race. And for the team, is a big goal, and we are very exciting to discover a new culture and with this monohull and with these new competitors around us.
So Frank, you've had an amazingly busy 2009 with the two big races, the two big victories. Is it now concentrating solely on the Volvo Ocean race, or do you and Groupama have other plans before the start in Alicante next year?
No, we are completely concentrated on the Volvo Ocean race. After the Route du Rhum, we keep only the monohull and the Volvo in our head. And for us, for now, the multi-hull is finished. So we can work better and concentrate better on the Volvo project.
Now, I know it's cold on the dockside there in Alicante, so thanks for talking to us. But how big a difference have you found it going into a Volvo 70 after the Groupama 3 trip? How different is the multi-hull sailing to the monohull version?
The monohull, there is a lot of hill compared with the multi-hull itself. But otherwise, the big problem on the monohull is the work of the crew. And we have to live with the poo in the room inside the boat and the hull is not very comfortable for all the crew, and there is a lot of hot waves on the deck, for example, more than on the usual like Groupama suite. And the fight as well with the other competitors the fight is very close, and it's very exciting. We did the one with Ten Island against Telefonica, and the race was very close against between us, and it's very exciting for that. So with the monohull and with the crew on board, I think the race is more interesting than the multi-hull in the record, for example.
Well, once again, apologies for the gremlins that may have spoilt your enjoyment of that interview with Frank Camas. One man who's discovered no gremlins at all while he's been in Dubai for this latest edition of Jibe Talkin' is our old friend Matt Sheehan, the technical editor of Yachting World, who has been catching up with all things Louis Vuitton Trophy.
The 2010 Louis Vuitton Trophy Series comes to a close this week. The last event is in Dubai, but it is also the end of the road for the America's Cup class. With just short of 100 boats built, this is the most successful class in the history of the America's Cup. So we're on the dockside in Dubai for the last of the Louis Vuitton events in the America's Cup class boats, and I've been joined by Murray Jones, who's no stranger to the America's Cup. You'll often see him if you actually look skyward, because he's usually dangling off the top of the rig doing a bit of wind spotting. But Murray, you've done quite a few America's Cups. Take us back to the first one that you did.
Yeah, I've done four in these Version 5 boats. First one was in 95 in San Diego with Team New Zealand. Did two with Team New Zealand and then two with Alinghi. And it's been great. I've enjoyed sailing the boats. It's been interesting seeing them evolve and work them up over the years. And it's a little bit sad that it's over, but you know, it's sort of probably time that we moved on, I think.
Yeah, well, it seems like, I mean, there was nearly 100 of these boats built, which would, I guess, make them the most successful America's Cup class in the 159-year history. But we've seen a huge change in the shapes. I mean, you mentioned that evolution of the boats. I mean, just remind us how they've evolved from 95 when you were sailing them until the current day.
Well, probably the biggest change was from 92 to 95. I wasn't involved in 92, but that's when the class first got introduced. And there were boats all over the place, and the boats were much, much wider. And then in 95, Team New Zealand came up with a narrow boat, and that concept was significantly quicker. And I think since then, the boats have got narrower and narrower. And I think, you know, in the 2007, that everyone had come very similar to, in the basic dimensions anyway, the hull forms were still quite different in shapes between, for instance, the Team New Zealand boat and Alinghi, who were in the finals, and there wasn't a huge amount of difference in the speed between them.
But was that change in shape venue driven, or was that just a natural evolution in the rule?
I think it's a natural evolution in the rule. Like whether you were building one of these boats for light air or heavy air, I think you'd still have a narrow boat. Yeah, the stability comes from the bulb, and you know, it might make a little difference to the beam, but not a huge amount.
That would seem to suggest that these boats have probably got to the end of their evolutionary cycle. Do you think that's the case, or do you think there's still more for these boats to give? I know they're out of the cup for next time.
I think if we were going again for another cycle, another cup with these boats, I don't think you'd see much change. And even in 2007 Cup, we're starting to work on very small windage items and really fine tuning, as a sailor who, you know, is involved in developing the boats and for the designers, it gets less and less interesting the more you're working on fine details and that you can't even test the result. You know it's better, but you can't test the result. So in that regard, I think it has come to an end, and it's nice to be going forward and you coming up with design concepts which are quite going to have big differences. Yeah.
How much do you think these boats contributed towards technology and racing generally, or did they?
I think, quite a lot, I think, yeah. With the systems on board, probably not so much the hull shapes, and because they are a bit unusual, being very heavy bulbs, and you know, that's not the way the boats have gone in the last 10 years anyway. So the sort of the general theme has been gone for wider and lighter, faster boats, and so these things are sort of a little bit unique in that regard. But the systems on board, the sails and stuff like that, the rigs have really contributed a lot to all aspects of sailing, you know, whether it's a Volvo or these TP52s or 65s, whatever. I think even the Supermaxes, I think there's been a lot of contribution that's come out of these boats.
And I would imagine the analysis, the data analysis, the data logging and all that kind of work, I mean, a lot of stuff's come out of that that's gone into mainstream racing, I guess.
I think so, yeah. Exactly, and you know, all the loads are monitored, and that information is really valuable for the designers to come back and verify what they predict, and that obviously spills, they can use those comparisons in other design projects.
Now you're in an interesting position because you're now with BMW Oracle. You were with Alinghi in the last cup on the Cat, and you're one of the very few sailors in the world at America's Cup level who's experienced monohulls and multi-hulls in the Cup. Are you pretty excited about the future? Now we're looking ahead to 72 footers. I guess you're not going to say you're not when you're wearing an Oracle shirt, but I mean, I suppose what I mean is, do you think the team, do you think crews in general are excited about the fact they just have no idea what we're dealing with?
I mean, personally, I'm really excited, just because it's a great challenge. The new boats are going to be exciting to figure out, firstly designing them, and the systems on board are going to be difficult to get the right solutions. And you know, I think that's going to be just an exciting period over the next 2 years, and you have to do it quite quickly because the time frame's tight, and then that's before we even go sailing, and when we go sailing it's going to be even more fun. You know, it's, you're going to, I like the aspect where you make a change and you figure something out, and you'll have, you know, a quite a significant gain generally, which is quite different to what we've been doing the last few, you know, version 5 America's Cups.
It does, certainly from the sailors I've spoken to, it seems to have fired them up a bit. It's sort of, it's a new challenge, it's a clean sheet of paper, and no one seems to be particularly, in the sailing teams, no one seems to be particularly fazed about the fact that it's a multi-hull. In fact, possibly the opposite.
I think that's true. I think people are excited to be doing something new, and the fact that it's multi-hull, I mean, all these guys that sail these boats, they're the best sailors in the world, and it won't make any difference whether it's a monohull or a multi-hull. They figure it out, and we were still, there's still boats, there's still wind and water, and everything, the same things apply. So I think people are excited to have a new challenge.
Did that surprise you last time, how quickly people on both sides of the camp, Alinghi and Oracle, picked up the whole multi-hull thing?
Yeah, I think it did. It did surprise me, actually. But and then looking back on it, I'm actually not really surprised, because basically from the culture that we come from the America's Cup, sailing and campaigning with quite a scientific sort of background and a methodical process, tends to lead to making progress quite quickly. And I think that's what we found relative to the multi-hull world that was out there. It never had really so much effort put into, or budget and resource put into, those two big multi-hulls we saw. And, you know, it was obviously they were well resourced, and the people were the highest qualified to do it, and we saw a rapid improvement.
Do you think there will be, that we'll see quite quickly, a spin-off and technology coming downstream from this new generation of multi-hulls, or do you think it's going to take a while for that to really sort of filter through, given how different these multi-hulls are from what most people sail?
Well, obviously the biggest difference is that they've got a wing on it, so, which is pretty unusual. There's not that many boats out there that have a wing, and so that technology is going to take a huge leap. You have them in the C-class, and they are the state of the art, and I think that level of understanding and knowledge and what the teams develop will that'll be a big part of the potential of these boats, I think. But then I think the systems on board, they'll be difficult boats to sail, and the systems, moving boards up and down and getting the sails filled and unfilled, and all those systems will get developed over a couple of years and fine-tuned, and I think they will get utilised on all sorts of other multi-hulls and big mono-hulls, yeah.
Now, that's the future, but for the immediate future, the next few days, you're at the top of the tree at the moment. BMW Oracle is leading the Louis Vuitton series here in Dubai, the last one. It doesn't get you any further down the line, does it? But I've just been out on the water with you, sitting on the back, racing with you, and you'd be hard-pressed to think you weren't training for the America's Cup. I mean, it's just, you guys never seem to give up.
It actually means a lot to us, this regatta. It's the last one in these boats, and we would dearly like to go out winning, and it's always a good feeling when you're winning, and so we've put a good effort into it, and the boys are taking it really seriously, and we'll see what the result brings us.
Well, finally, we're off to the Barcelona World Race, and Andy Micheljohn, the Kiwi, competing in the event with Britain's Alex Thompson aboard Hugo Boss. And I asked him how everything was going in the preparation for the boat. Is he keeping the shore crew good and busy?
They've all got pretty good lists of, you know, spares and food and, you know, the general kit to go on the boat, you know, the maintenance schedules, how much, you know, how things wear down and wear away, you know, what the problems have been in 90 days of sailing. Because there's an awful lot of things you can get away with in 20 or 30 days of sailing that start to pop up after 50 or 60 days. So Alex Thompson Racing's got a pretty good handle on those potential problems, and it's really just you know, I've been trying to make sure we're not taking too much gear, trying to go light, but trying to go efficient.
And safe, I'm guessing, as well. Now, Andy, how difficult is it now? You've so much preparation done, you're now in the gym doing everything like that. How difficult is it to wait these final 40 days before you can actually get started on this?
It's the last, I remember putting on Facebook 90 days to the start, and it seems like I did that last week. So we've had 50 days go pretty quick, but we're planning to leave England Monday next week, Monday night, and starting to get pretty itchy about the boat going back in the water again and going sailing, and, you know, we've got a whole lot of new sails here for the race, and so we're getting pretty itchy to look at those and you know, see what changes we've made and how they work, and I think once the boat gets back in the water and we leave England, the next month or so is going to disappear pretty quickly.
Andy, are you also keeping half an eye on what the rivals are doing at the moment?
Yeah, we followed the Route to Rum race. We used that for a little bit of our own practice with navigation. So, yeah, we followed that, and it was interesting to see the older boats more than competitive against the newer boats. What we don't know is exactly how we go against the older boats or the newer boats. So we've got a little bit of training lined up for the trip south. We've got a couple of boats that are going to do parts of the trip down with us, so hopefully we can learn the last little bits of the puzzle on the way down.
So, Andy, you're leave on Monday. You're then, what, in Barcelona full-time until you start, or do you have other things you need to do?
We'll both try and take a little bit of a break because the assembly date is the 17th of December, and then after that, there's, you know, there's the usual media commitments, and then you got Christmas, and then more official commitments. So between arriving in Barcelona around the 8th or the 10th, we've got about 5 or 6 days of time up our sleeves, which we're actually going to try and get away from the boat, you know, try and spend a little more time with the family, and that'll be our last chance before the race starts.
It's going to be a funny old Christmas and New Year this year for you and the family. Finally then, Andy, well, I guess what we'll be doing, I hope, is catching up with you just before you leave, being one of those media commitments, if that's all right with you.
Absolutely, that'd be great. Hugo Boss are very keen on us doing as much as we can, and you know, we've got some great facilities on the boat for communicating and taking footage and movies and sending them off. So that's definitely something we're both going to be working pretty hard on during the course of the race and just before the race.
Well, that's it for this latest edition of the Volvo Sailing Podcast. Once again, apologies for the quality of the audio in that Frank Camas interview. And again, I hope it didn't spoil the enjoyment too much. We'll be back again next time, and I promise we'll make sure it sounds perfect for the next Volvo Sailing Podcast. But in the meantime, remember to check in at regular intervals to www.volvooceanrace.com.